Hey, everyone. Thank you for listening to I Think Not, the podcast that recaps all of your favorite true crime TV shows.
Even frogging, the source of all of our nightmares.
You can listen to all new crazy stories every week on Amazon Music.
That's right, where you can find our show, I Think Not, and all of your favorite podcasts. Thank you, Amazon Music, for hosting this nonsense.
Hail to the guardians of the watchtowers of the East. Powers of air and invention. Hear me.
Us.
Hear us.
Joey, what's happening? What are we doing?
It's early in the morning. You forced me to get up. This is what people do when they wake up. They drink coffee and invoke the spirit. We're invoking the spirit. Quiet down.
Are we just calling the four corners because it's morning?
Yeah, that's what happens. We're going to invoke the spirit and we're going to walk on water because that is the only way I'm going to wake up, okay? This is what we're doing.
Yes, Mano.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mano. Send me dead sharks on the beach. I'm going to walk on water, be possessed by you, and I'm going to fly in the night. Yes. Me and Nev Campbell. Here we go.
Roll the music, Rick. I don't know what's happening. Morning, down bitches. Well, it is morning to us. I always say podcasting is the best job because it's a lot to do, but you can do it at home and with no pants on. And sometimes when your schedules don't line up, you have to do so at 8 o'clock in the morning. But we are barely here. Good morning, my Joseph.
Good morning, baby doll. I have had my protein shake. I'm drinking a coffee. I'm in my Skims robe and I have no underwear on. So I'm sorry if a testicle slips out.
Also, do you want to put a light on you? You look like I can barely see you. I just see the shimmer off your cheekbones.
I'm a witch now, and I sit in the darkness and I wait for Mano to show up. And that's right.
Fair enough. Welcome, everyone, to I Think Not, the podcast where Joey Taranto and I will do whatever it takes in order for us to recap your favorite true crime TV shows. I am Ellen Marsh, and yes, we are both in robes. Yes, it is 8 o'clock in the morning, but we are still recording. We are here. How are you all? How are you, Joseph?
How dare you ask me that question right now?
Okay, I'm everyone. Actually fine. I got a full 8 hours. I'm good. We're going to record this episode. It's going to be great. And then I have therapy at 10 a.m. so I can complain.
You can complain about me. That's
no,
wonderful.
You're the
I'm
least
sure
of my
your therapist will have a lot to say.
You're the least of my worries, my love.
We are continuing on with our series, Killer Siblings, for the next couple of episodes. This is intense, right?
Turns out siblings can be killer. And not in a great way.
Yeah. My family is loyal, but we draw the line at some things. I mean, I'm pretty sure that my brothers would barely go to 7-Eleven to get me a Diet Coke unless I begged them and probably offered them money. But apparently siblings will do a lot of other things for each other.
Let me tell you something. I will go to McDonald's for my siblings, but I'm not going to prison. I'm too pretty. I'm too pretty.
You are too pretty for prison. If you would like some of our more lighthearted true crime, like Love After Lockup, Pink Collar Crimes, and How I Got Away With It, that you will find on our Patreon, along with our long series. We do about 10 episodes of a series, and we have covered some doozies, ones I think we should definitely come back to on the main feed. Don't you think, Joey?
I agree. Can we please do I Almost Got Away With It on the main feed?
Yes, I am saying absolutely yes. And if you want to see I Almost Got Away With It, that is what we are covering on our live show, and there are still tickets available, and we will be announcing some new cities. So please head to our website or any of our socials where you can find our calendar, because we're coming to St. Louis, Tampa, Seattle, LA. We're going to a bunch of places, and you're not going to want to miss this show because it is stupid.
It is. We have perfected the art of stupidity. Can I just tease them with one of our cities that we are adding to our tour?
Yes.
It rhymes with Indianapolis.
No, honey, when you say the rhymes with, you have to say Schmindianapolis.
Oh, okay, I'll try another one. It rhymes with Hotlanta.
No, Joey, you can't give them another city.
Okay, fine. It rhymes with, we're going to North Carolina.
Okay, stop. Okay, you know what? You can't be trusted at the microphone. Yes, we are announcing those cities coming up. You can find all of that information on our website, as well as information on patreon.com/ithinknot. We got to get to the episode before Joey gives away any more secrets. You, sir, we are never recording in the morning again. Was this your plan the whole time?
Also, I'm gay.
Okay. Let's get to the episode. Killer Siblings, Season 3, Episode 3, Angles.
Two boys in the wooded area noticed a vehicle on fire.
There was a body in the back of the car.
The person was killed elsewhere.
Your family was devastated. The two little girls were left without a mother 2 weeks before Christmas.
Her life was cut short in its prime.
There had been some domestic violence calls in the past.
He was a person who had significant financial resources.
He didn't do it alone. He needed help.
The Secret Service provide information from an informant.
This is the break that we're waiting for. They would pay him $25,000 to get rid of her.
The brothers thought they could do anything to anyone without penalty.
Well, guess what, y'all? We are in Ellen's neck of the woods.
I knew this was coming.
We are in the land of Bon Jovi, the Jersey Shore, and the ever so glamorous Atlantic Titty. That's a deep cut.
How do you leave out Pauly D? If you're going to say Jersey Shore, how dare you leave out Pauly D, Mike the Situation, and Sammy Sweetheart?
Oh my God, that show was ridiculous. It came back, right?
Right. So it was ridiculous. It was a fascinating time to be alive. These kids had no idea what they were getting into. They had no idea this was going to be a cultural phenomenon. And I had no idea they did subsequent seasons. And I got kind of in a TikTok hole about it. That time was crazy. Those people were so famous, and they were just like, they had no idea what they were getting themselves into.
None whatsoever. But also, I have to say, the men on that show were disgusting. And I'm not talking about their faces, but like the way they talked about women and corralled women, it was disgusting.
It really was. I could do a whole true crime thing about it because they didn't know what they were auditioning for. They didn't know what they were getting themselves into. They didn't know it was going to blow up. But it is a poor display of the male species, I will say that. And the women fell into a very obvious trope as well.
It's true. Cab's here. You know, JWoww had the best glow up, though. She really did.
Oh, yeah, she
did.
Looks beautiful.
She is stunning. She should have been on Xena Warrior Princess in the 90s. Anyway.
What show are we covering right now? Buckle up, everyone. We're in New Jersey. I knew this was coming. I knew I was going to get it. It is weird to hear all of these towns that I know very well. But I guess it's time for Jersey to have some heat since we've been in the South so much this year.
Joey, guess what?
What?
Miracle Made is back. Okay, let me ask you a question. Did you know that your temperature at night can have one of the greatest impacts on your sleep quality?
I do now.
What? Because if you wake up too hot or too cold, you know she's going to be testy. But here's the thing. Miracle Made are sheets inspired by NASA, and they use silver-infused fabric to make temperature-regulating bedding. Don't ask me what that means. I just know that it works.
Also, can we just talk about how sexy Miracle Made sheets are? I got mine in stone. It's like a beautiful deep gray, and when you walk in, it means that I am a man who sleeps well, and I mean business.
He's a man. Also, the self-cleaning. You know that silver-infused magic? I don't understand what it is. Well, it also prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth, so that means it stays cleaner and fresher 3 times longer than sheets, because your sheets can get really nasty.
Also, did we mention how luxurious they are? They're so comfortable. And you get that without the high price tag of other luxury brands, and it feels as nice, if not nicer, than sheets used by some 5-star hotels.
Go to trymiracle.com/thinknot to try Miracle Made sheets today.
And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%.
And if you use our promo code thinknot at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%.
Y'all, Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund.
You know I love a guarantee, so upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made.
Go to trymiracle.com/thinknot and use the code thinknot to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off.
Again, that's trymiracle.com/thinknot to treat yourself.
Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode and letting me look sexy in my sheets.
Bergen County, New Jersey is really kind of a bedroom community for New York City. It's a vast swath of suburbs.
Some of those suburban areas are very affluent. Others are less so. There's all kinds of people here.
Now, you know, I live near Bergen County, and I have seen the welcome sign, and the welcome sign says, "Welcome to Bergen County. We have all kinds of people." And then under it, in like a smaller font, it says, but mostly Italians who call it gravy.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. I thought it was welcome to Bergen County. We know a guy.
Yeah. That's on the exit sign when you're leaving County. It's like, bye, come back to Bergen County because we know a guy. And also, I'm sorry, we call it gravy. You know how it makes me mad when they call it gravy.
Oh, boy.
And she talks about the demographics. Now, there is some money in Bergen County. There's also, it runs the gamut. There are some less affluent parts of town. But when you see these houses, we're talking Real Housewives of New Jersey style. These palatial, ornate, over-the-top homes. There is some money in Jersey. Don't get it twisted. And most of it is under a mattress.
Oh, does Teresa Giudice live there?
Oh, yeah. She lives in Franklin Lakes. They mention Franklin Lakes later. That's where the guy lives. And listen, all the money kept in your mattress. You know why? I don't trust the banks.
Yeah, of
I don't
course
trust
not.
The banks.
No, no, no.
I'm not going to trust the banks. I'm going to keep my money where I can see it under my mattress.
Yeah. Personally, I like to bury mine in the backyard next to the dog bones.
Yeah, they're just dog bones. Don't ask any questions.
Well, Detective Jack Oogly? Woogly?
Sure.
Oogly? They never pronounce it's spelled Oogly. I'm sorry, okay? He says that any crime that takes place in the more affluent areas, they're kept quiet. But the crime we are covering today could not be swept under the rug. It was horrific and it polarized this area. So it is December 14th, 1984 in North Arlington, New Jersey.
Okay, I don't mean to sidestep, but this is actually very important.
Okay.
Do you know what the Billboard number one song of 1984 was?
Oh my God. Okay, wait, I want to guess. Is it a Pat Benatar song?
No.
Oh, I want to get this. Is it David Bowie?
No.
Oh, man. It's Cyndi Lauper.
No.
That would be 83. I don't know.
When Doves Cry by Prince. Hit it, Rick!
This is what it sounds like when doves cry.
That's a callback, y'all. I have a lot of trauma around Prince. I don't want to talk about it, but it's interesting.
Let's talk about it.
I'm good.
North Arlington police received a call on December 14th, early in the morning, that a woman from their town was missing. Caridad Alvarez told them that her daughter, Xiomara Engel, a 28-year-old woman, was living with her and hadn't come home. She had the little girls at home.
So Xiomara was going through a divorce at the time, and she was living with her mom. That happens a lot when you leave, and that area is very expensive. And honestly, she just needed to get out. That is very common. So she was living with her mom at the time. So on this particular night, Xiomara was going to meet her ex-husband, William Engel, and the mom is basically saying she didn't come home. Now, she was going to meet her ex-husband because they were going Christmas shopping for their little girls, which I thought was very sweet, very good co-parenting. I love that. We see a picture of William Engel. What were your initial thoughts, my love?
Oh my God, he definitely knows several guys.
He knows several guys. And that mustache is coiffed, honey. That mustache, that receding hairline, the fluffy hair, the wide-ass ties. Why did they wear such wide-ass ties in the 80s? What were they doing? Trying to cover the nipples?
I have no idea, but this mustache is...
Mustaching.
Mustaching. I've been meaning to ask you something, actually.
I mustache you a question.
All right, bada bing, bada boom. It's 8 a.m. I got the jokes. I got.
Listen, I'm here all day. Try the veal. It's very good. Don't forget to tip your servers.
You
Thank
got
you.
The mustache. I got the jokes.
Is that an Italian joke? I do have a mustache. I lasered it off
years
ago.
Oh, my God. Stop it. Well, I was going to ask if you wanted to go for a mustache ride.
What does that mean, Joseph?
I think you know.
No, say it. I don't understand it. Explain the joke to me.
I don't think you need me to explain
you want
it
me to
you.
To sit on your face? Is that the invitation? You want me to come bare-assed and sit on your face? That's what we're talking about? The answer is yes and of course, but I think one of us is going to chicken out and it's not going to be me.
I bind you, Ellen. I bind you from doing harm. Harm against others and harm against yourself. So when the police spoke with Xiomara's mom, she did not mince words. She was like, look, William is not a good guy. He was terrible to my daughter. And one thing about her is she would never in a million years abandon her daughter. She wouldn't just take off and run. This is not like her.
That's just not a thing. Yes, there are some people that are going through a mental health crisis, but we hear it all the time, right? Women are not just going to leave their children. And she hadn't done anything in the past to indicate that she would do something like this. And the prosecutor says,
and mothers don't generally absent themselves voluntarily from their children. That's a red flag.
Well, the last time Xiomara was seen, she was driving her 1974 white Ford station wagon. You know, the kind with the wood paneling on it.
Joey, what are you going to say?
We had one of those growing up.
Okay, Here's my question. I have never been given the opportunity to pose this question in a public forum, and it crosses my mind probably once every 6 months.
Yes, I've done drugs at church.
Okay, thank you. On to the next. Who was the guy at the station wagon making place? And they saw this, like, new station wagon, and they were like, ugh, I don't know. It looks good, but something's missing. I don't know what it is. Wait a minute. And then one guy was like, I have an idea. I've been sitting on this for a minute. How about we throw some wood on the sides of it? And they were like, No, wait, I'm serious. No, we can't put what? No, let's just give it a go. Hold on, let me grab this wood. And the guy, like, puts it on there, and he's like, eh? This looks good. And then the guy's like, my, you'll never guess. They went for the wood paneling idea. They're going to put it on the side of station wagons. It's going to be huge.
I have to tell you, I kind of love it. I'm, like, nostalgic for it.
Absolutely not. It is so disgusting to me.
Oh, I love it. When we were growing up, though, ask me if we ever wore seatbelts. Spoiler alert, we didn't. The 80s were wild.
It was a wild time. I don't know how any of us made it out alive. We got wood paneling on the sides. We got seatbelts, and they're smoking cigarettes on airplanes.
Oh, my God. It's true. But also, do you know that those cars used to have a seat that faced the bumper all the way
in
the back.
We had one in our Volvo as well, the back seat that you could ride backwards in. We loved that seat.
We loved it too. And I used to flip the bird to everyone on the highway, on the roads, on the byways, on the everywhere. I would flip everyone off.
You're an evil child. What happened to you?
Nothing's changed.
You don't love yourself.
So now the first priority is to find that car. So they put a bolo out for this wood paneling.
I feel like you have such a sense of pride every time you say bolo, because I remember the day when you found out what a bolo was many years ago when you were just a little fetus podcaster. Mm-hmm. And now every time you say bolo, I feel like you have a sense of pride, and I want to acknowledge that.
Thank you so much. You know, I have a bolo out for you every day with your bad attitude. Can we get a bolo out for Marsha's bad attitude? Yes, it is 8 a.m. and she did call the four corners. Yes, but she's got a rotten attitude and her top bun looks like a bow. It's actually very cute.
My lights are shining off my forehead right now.
We also ran checks on William Angle and found out there had been some domestic violence calls between Zamara and William Angle in the past.
And so hours after that missing person call, around 5 a.m. in the morning, the police head to William Angle's house in Franklin Lakes, New Jersey, home of Teresa Giudice.
There has to be something else. Prostitution whore? You are f***ing gay 19 times?
I love Italians who really represent what we're all about. Thank you, Teresa Giudice. How was prison?
Is it Giudice? Giudice?
They say Giudice just to be fancy when they feel like being Italian, and then they say Giudice when they're not. It's giving appropriation.
It's giving Duarte Felice is what it's giving. Please, somebody tell me that you got that reference. It's niche. Lots of niche references today. So Franklin Lakes, like you said, is a wealthy upper class community. And William is not hurting in the money department. Okay.
Right. They say
William was a person who had significant financial resources.
Right. Thank you. Significant financial resources is a fancy way of saying rich as fuck.
Rich as fuck.
So William comes to the door. He seems concerned. And by all accounts, he's answering all their questions, lets them in and explained, yes, I was supposed to meet my ex-wife or future ex-wife to go shopping at 7:30, and he confirmed his whole story. They also find out he owns a glass etching company called Decor, and that night, Zamara called the main number at 8:30 and saying she was running late, I'm doing a little shopping, but I'm going to be there in a minute.
And he said, I think she called from a payphone because I could hear cars in the background. Remember payphones?
Do you know I Googled where to find a payphone just to show Lola a payphone? And the closest payphone is like 25 minutes away, like a couple towns over.
Whoa.
I just wanted to show it to her. No, I thought there would be one close. It's not close.
Also, we used to pick up those phones and put them to our ears and talk into that mouthpiece with our mouths after people sneeze their fucking plague all over it. Disgusting.
Not giving it another thought. We just spoke into other people's spit. We didn't even have hand sanitizer or alcohol wipes. You know when they hand them out on the airplane? I hoard them. I put them in my purse. I take them. I'm like, let me take a couple more. I put them in my purse. No such thing in 1984. You just, whatever herpes is on that phone, now you got it.
Hi, doctor. I think I have chlamydia.
of the mouth from a payphone in Bergen County. Never mind, it's fine. So William says he waited for Ziamara till 9 p.m. that evening, and then he went to see his business associate, Anita Nimberger, who lived in the town over. And that's basically all he had to say.
So we go back and spoke in great detail with Ziamara's family to get a clearer picture about who she was.
Ziamara Alvarez was born in Cuba in 1956. She left Cuba in 1959 during the Cuban Revolution when she was about 3 years old.
And their family settled in northern New Jersey, went to public school there, and she always wanted to become a cosmetologist. Do we say cosmetologist anymore, or is there like a fancier, nicer word? Like, we don't say secretary. Like, is there a nicer?
You just say makeup artist.
Makeup artist. But that included like hair and nails and stuff.
I don't know.
Whoever you are, if you like cosmetologist, I love you. I respect you. You're amazing. Tell me if there's another name. I'll use it.
Let me tell you, in New York City, when I was trying to make it as an actor, I didn't want to wait tables because nobody wants me waiting on them. It would not be very nice.
I don't even know why that thought crossed your mind for 1 second, but go on with your story.
Well,
honey.
I was fired from every server job that I ever had. Anyway.
You know, you are the best friend a woman could ask for.
Thank you.
You have a heart of gold. You would do anything. I trust you implicitly in every aspect of my life. The Lord didn't bless you with patience. And it's not that you lose your temper. You just have your gauge of bullshit is 0.00.
It's true. I will walk away very quickly. And so I knew I couldn't wait tables, so I started peddling the makeup at the counters for Chanel.
Which you are very good at.
Thank you very much. In New York City, I worked at Saks. I worked at Bergdorf. I worked at Henri Bendel. And I don't know how I lasted so long because, you know, you have goals and you have to sell makeup. And I could not have cared less. All I wanted to do was give people a smoky eye and a nude lip. But people were so demanding. And they think if they give you $5, they can treat you like they're Mariah Carey and you're their personal makeup artist. Mm-hmm. It was a nightmare.
Ziamara was really smart and she had lots of goals. When she was 20, she started working for William's company, Decor, and that's where they met. He was the owner. She was young and drop-dead gorgeous, and he was 12 years older than her, but he had no problems with showering her with attention and gifts. And for a 20-year-old, with a man with a sexy mustache in the 80s, that was enough for her.
Yeah, I mean, these two hit it off and everything was great. He came from a great family. He owned his own business. Things were good. And that's when we get some backstory on William.
The patriarch of the Engel family was a Herbert Engel Sr., an Austrian Jew who fled the Holocaust after World War II and had gone to Colombia after the war.
Once he moved there, he married a local woman named Lucia, where they had, wait for it, 9 children. That is 9 too many.
Honey, that's what they did in the 40s. They had sex and then had babies every single time, pretty much.
You know what they had in the 40s? Billie Holiday. You know what they didn't have? Condoms.
Yeah, it's proven. It was overpopulated.
My God, the worst. And so William was born in 1944, and his younger brother, Herbert, was born in 1948, same as my mother. And the kids were obsessed with their parents. They had an ideal childhood where they basically had everything they could want and need.
Yeah, they were rich. They were rich, entitled kids. And you know what rich, entitled kids grow up to be?
Cunts.
Yeah, rich, entitled adults. So just keep that in mind through this whole story. And when they all turned, you know, somewhere in their 20s, they all slowly moved to the United States. And that's when they decided to open Decor. And old money makes new money. They continued to make that money. And that's what people do when you have money. You open businesses, those become successful, and your money just keeps quadrupling. There lies the wage gap in our society for another podcast. Now, Herbert and William were very close. They were 4 years apart. And a reporter describes Herbert like this.
Herbert was slightly more rougher around the edges.
But Anita, who is not here for your shit and will call you out on your bullshit, explains him like this.
Herbert Engel, I found him more thug-like. He just rubbed me the wrong way, frankly.
I like really straight to the point descriptions. Thank you, Anita.
Me too.
I appreciate that.
Joey, it's our favorite. They're back.
Who?
Skims. Tell them all about Skims.
Y'all, let me tell you something. When I tell my friends that Skims is a sponsor of this podcast, they light up like a Christmas tree.
You know that I love Skims bras. You've seen me show them on our Instagram. Also, check out our Instagram. You can see me in my Skims bra. I have been wearing Skims, and I am slowly changing over my entire bra and underwear collection to Skims. I have tried the Fits Everybody t-shirt bra, and it is actually, I promise you, the best t-shirt bra I have ever owned. I wear it under everything because you don't want any bumps or lumps. You want those Tetons to be nice and seamless.
I gave my sister Jessica the weightless scoop bra, and her Grand Tetons have never sat higher or perkier. She's in love with them.
And I haven't just tried the t-shirt bra. I've tried the Fits Everyone plunge bra, the no-show unlined bra. Can you tell I don't like my bra showing? The thing I love about Skims is they have bras for every size, shape, color. They are such an inclusive company. If you haven't checked them out, just do me a favor. Go check them out online and see what they have, because trust me, I didn't think they were as amazing as they are.
So shop Skims bras at skims.com. Now available in 62 sizes, 30A to 46H.
Plus, get free shipping on orders over $75.
If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show in the drop-down menu that follows.
And if you feel like putting your Grand Tetons on Instagram, you can tag us or whatever. Is that weird?
Not at all. So William wanted to live the high life, right? That's what he knew. That's what he wanted. And he loved to party, play host. He wanted to rub elbows with celebrities. He was charming and outgoing, and people really liked him. And that appealed to Ziamara. She wanted to be a part of it. So in 1981, these two got married in Naples, Florida, which is actually very beautiful.
It's very beautiful. There are beautiful parts of Florida. Absolutely. I'm sure she had wonderful flowers. No doubt in my mind.
A red leather interior in a white stretch limo.
I'm sure it was beautiful. I'm sure she was gorgeous. She was a gorgeous woman. I'm sure she had gorgeous flowers. If they weren't waterfall, I'd be shocked. Call me surprised if they weren't waterfall flowers.
Listen, it's 1981, all right? I want you to play Olivia Newton-John's Physical as our first dance, all right? It's going to be wonderful. Does anybody have a headband? So the problem is, by 1983, Ziamara wanted a divorce. So much so that she was willing to walk away with nothing.
Very Tina Turner.
I want you to be very sure about this. Means you're going to walk out of here with absolutely nothing.
Except my name. I'll give up all that other stuff, but only if I get to keep my name. I worked too hard for it.
I mean, Tina Turner was like, get me out. I will start anew. And so is Ziamara. I would just like to say that in this reenactment, there's people fighting, obviously showing their contentious relationship. That actress is wearing a red jumpsuit that's supposed to depict 1983. I do not care. I would love to know where she got that jumpsuit because it's gorgeous. I'd probably take out the shoulder pads. But if you're listening, please tell me where you got it. I love it.
You know what, Ellen? I'll make a call. I know a guy. And so...
Also, the true crime of the beginning part of the story, because nothing bad has happened, is why Angela Bassett didn't win the Oscar for What's Love Got to Do with It.
It's a crime against humanity.
It's a crime against... I had a head of tark when I heard that Angela Bassett did not win. That is some of the most epic portrayal of a biography I have ever seen. Don't get me started. Don't even get me started. I can't stop doing an accent. Apparently, this is what happens to me when we record at 8 a.m. I apologize.
We are in Bergen County. So here's the thing. William obviously had a dark side. He was very controlling. And even when he wasn't with Ziamara, he found a way to control her life. So back to December 14th, 1985, 4 hours after Ziamara is reported missing.
We received information from William that Ziamara was supposedly at the Bergen County Mall prior to when she was scheduled to meet with him.
Detectives went to the mall and drove up and down all the parking lots looking for the car.
They also checked the area around William's business decor because that's where she was supposed to go, right? She told William that she was on her way, but they find nothing. Also, can we talk about malls in the 80s?
Can we talk about malls now? You know, the two things that New Jersey is notorious for, diners and malls. Also the mafia. That's a bonus. But I love the mall. I love the mall.
But malls in the 80s were wild because it's where everyone went. They were super populated, and it was just people just fist fighting over Cabbage Patch Dolls and Teddy Ruxpin. But if I ever get nostalgic for, like, 80s malls, I will watch Fast Times at Ridgemont Hall because... What did I just say?
Fast Times at Ridgemont
Yeah,
Hall.
I will watch Fast Times at Ridgemont Mall. Ridgemont High, because...
Keep all of those missteps. You shut up. Missteps.
You stop it. It's 8 a.m., okay? Mano has not arrived yet, because half of it takes place in the mall, but it's just like everyone's dressed like Pat Benatar. It's weird wood paneling everywhere and carpeted.
It was cultural. It was a cultural thing that kids today will never understand. For a bonus point, I have shared this before, Joey. What was the name of my Volkswagen Scirocco in high school?
Spicoli.
It was.
Yes.
You're so good. Yay! Look at you.
It was a wild
time. The
morning
isn't going to stop that cute little brain of yours. If you got that at home while you're listening, you get...
Mouth chlamydia.
You get mouth chlamydia.
We put that car, as well as a description of Ziamara, out on a teletype alarm to the entire East Coast to be on the lookout for.
So it's 19 hours after we discover that Ziamara is missing. It's 9 p.m. on December 14th, and Bobby Elvington is here, and he is an arson reporter. And he says that two boys were in the woods, and oddly enough, do you know what they were doing in the woods?
What?
They were looking for a cow as white as milk, a cape as red as blood, a hair as yellow as corn, and a slipper as pure as gold. I had no idea.
I hate you for referencing Into the Woods, but I also love you for it.
Once upon a time.
I don't know. I was like, where on earth are they going to find a cow as white as milk? But carry on. Actually, this was quite a left turn for me, because they said the woods, and then the guy in the next breath says they're in Olanta, South Carolina.
Yeah, we are in the South. So apparently two boys in the rural area of Olanta stumble onto a car that is ablaze. They call
nine. That's not what they say.
What?
They say...
Fire.
Fire. In a rural area, in a fire.
It was on fire.
And so the boys call 911. Firefighters are dispatched. They arrive and they can see it's a station wagon and the entire vehicle is engulfed in flames. They don't see anyone inside until they get to the trunk of the car. In the trunk, they find the badly burned remains of a person.
Yeah. Now, we're 350 miles away from New Jersey, so nobody is flagging anything having to do with Ziamara, who is still missing. So they go to investigate who this person was who has tragically lost their life. And, you know, this is a really small town, and they were like, there's actually not a lot of station wagons here. So a lot of the people, the investigators, the local police, they didn't recognize their car. Moreover, there wasn't anything around the vehicle that would indicate that anything happened at that spot. Obviously, the fire happened there, but they're deducing that this person was actually not killed there, but killed somewhere else.
The body was removed and transported for a autopsy to try to determine the cause of death and to identify the victim. We could see there was no license plate on the vehicle, so the only recourse we could do was get the vehicle identification number, the VIN number, off the vehicle to try to find the registered owner.
And when they ran that number, police realized there's a bolo out on this car in New Jersey.
Yeah. So now once they realize that the VIN number matches Ziamara, they're assuming that it's her, but they still need to make a positive identification. So they reach out to the family to get her dentist's information, to obtain the dental records. And that is what gives them the positive identification that the body found in the back of the station wagon was indeed Ziamara Engel. So now they're dealing with a homicide and no longer a missing person, sadly.
And the family is horrified and devastated. This poor woman left behind two daughters, a 4-year-old and a 10-year-old. And this was 2 weeks before Christmas. I can't even imagine. So back in South Carolina, an autopsy is performed, and the medical examiner is unable to determine the cause of death. But they were able to determine that Ziamara died 12 hours prior to the fire. She had no smoke in her lungs.
Science is amazing. They were able to determine that by the amount of food that was still in her stomach. That is incredible to me. Forensic science, I will never understand. Shout out to Jane, one of our forensic down bitches. They knew that the cause of death wasn't the fire because she had no smoke in her lungs. So again, she absolutely was not murdered in this area, but they still don't know how she was murdered. So back in New Jersey, 12 hours after the body was discovered. We're at December 15th at 9 a.m.
Since this turned into a homicide case, we have to look closer at William Engel. I wanted to have another interview with him. we went to day court and invited him in to come to the prosecutor's office, but he told us that he couldn't right now because he had a lunch meeting with the mayor of Paterson, the city in New Jersey.
And they were like, well, we're talking about your deceased ex-wife. Do you maybe want to change your plans? And he just kept dropping the mayor's name. And they thought, are you trying to, what, posture to us? Do you think we're going to think you're some big shot? Because, what, you're going to sit down at a Chili's with the mayor of Paterson? We'd really like to discuss this homicide instead, my friend.
Yeah, and the truth is they can't force William to do anything at this point.
And so William's like, you know what? I'm going to go to my meeting and I'm going to do you a favor. I'm going to show up. I'm going to come down and talk to you at 2:30. Is that good? That way I can go to my lunch, have an awesome blossom, and then I'll come down and talk to you. 2:30, I'll be there.
I'll see you at 2:30, kids.
Chili, guess who's back?
Who?
Blissey. I don't even feel like I have to look at this copy. The amount of Blissey gifts I have been given. For those of you who don't know, Blissey pillowcases are basically magic in a pillowcase. They are 100% mulberry silk pillowcases. They help you sleep better. They help your hair. They help your skin. They basically solve all of my problems.
Exactly. And we know that there are a ton of dupes out there that claim satin can be an alternative to silk, but that is just not the case. Satin is made from synthetic fibers like polyester, while silk is luxurious all-natural fiber. Silk is more breathable, moisture-wicking, and gentle. It's also way more durable, which I need because I've got a hard head and I sweat all over the place.
It's so good for your skin because it reduces frizz and tangles and prevents breakage in your hair, something that I have absolutely seen the difference in since I've been using Blissey pillowcases, but also not only does it keep the moisture in your hair, it keeps the moisture in your skincare products. I don't know about you, but I'm putting every miracle cream, balm, serum that can go on this old face to prevent aging, and cotton literally absorbs all of that stuff off your face. So why would you spend all that money on your amazing skincare just to have it soak into your pillow? With Blissey, you absolutely have nothing to worry about because with Blissey, the silk doesn't absorb all of that moisture. So all those wrinkles, dry, flaky skin in the morning, you're not going to see it because you're going to have healthier hair and skin with Blissey. Trust me, I have them in all colors, all shapes, and I pretty much bought them for every member of my family this past Christmas.
Also, what a blessing that I don't have to wake up looking like little orphan Annie with my curls all over the place. So everybody loves them. They have a ton of different prints and colors, and they have great gifts because there's an option for literally anyone. Men love them too.
They have over 1 million raving fans, including us, and you could be the next.
Try now risk-free for 60 nights at blissey.com/think and get an additional 30% off.
That's blissy.com/think and use code THINK to get an additional 30% off.
Your skin and hair will thank you, right, Ellen?
Yeah, but can you also send us those orphan Annie pictures? I'd kind of like to see them.
So at 3:30, William arrives at the police station in Hackensack, New Jersey.
You're late.
And William signs a consent form allowing the police to check his phone records. They purposely did not tell William that Ziamara had been found and so had the car. So William gives the same story about how he and Ziamara were supposed to go Christmas shopping, but he also offers up this. He says, you know, I really miss her. I love her and I want to reconcile with her. And that's when the detectives informed William of Ziamara's death and the circumstances surrounding it.
And he puts his head in his hand and gives a telenovela, really awful performance. It got 12% on Rotten Tomatoes of completely distraught husband. They were like, yeah, you can make sounds and shake, but not a tear, no sadness. It's just, I mean, listen, that's not a reason to say someone is a murderer, but it does raise a red flag. The mother of your children is dead and you can't even show any emotion. He has to cover his lack of emotion by putting his hands in his face. It's like, we can see you. We're right here.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
So when the police ask if they can search his home, William agrees. And they do. And police really have no idea what they're looking for, but they're just looking. And simultaneously, the police have a team searching his business, decor.
And it's at this point, William Engel is beginning to resist.
William Engel excuses himself. He goes out of the room and he calls someone And he hands the phone to us. And it's an attorney on the other end of the phone who tells us that all consent searches are canceled.
He starts to get a bit cagey, and he leaves the room for a minute and makes a call. Comes back, hands the phone to the guy. It's his lawyer, and his lawyer's like, wrap up. We're done here.
What you trying to hide, William?
Exactly. Because they're not there with a warrant. They're there only by the permission of William, and that permission has been revoked. Just like the love of my father. So...
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ. Well, I guess Mano is here because things just got dark. So, fast forward to the evening of December 15th, 1984. The family informs police that Ziamara had been dating a man who lived in Newark by the name of Andre Diaz. Immediately, police are like, we're going to speak to Andre. And he says, look, we've only been dating for a few months. She worked part-time as my secretary. I know you hate that word, but that's what they said. Okay, don't yell at me.
I mean, you can change it. You can say administrative assistant. She probably did more than he did and probably ran the show. But go ahead with your secretary.
Sorry. She worked as the beautiful phone answerer.
Misogyny. It doesn't matter if you're gay or straight. I'm going to write it. I'm going to release it on iTunes in the summer. Keep going.
And Andre was like, look, I've been very concerned about Ziamara's disappearance. In fact, the night that she disappeared, I went to her mother's house to tell her I couldn't get in touch with her. And then he tells police that he's been receiving threatening phone calls from a man named Raul Valdita. That is the fakest name I've ever heard in my life.
Who's Raul? Very ominous name, very threatening name. Nobody's named Raul.
No more talk of darkness.
Well, there's that Raul.
Right.
Okay, that Raul, but... Really? We're going with Raul Valdita?
Yep.
And they thought the same thing. Even though the investigators, they love Phantom of the Opera. They saw it two times with their wife and their grandkids. Wonderful show. Mm-hmm. But this Raul Valdita, no criminal history, no phone records, no address. Nothing that proves Raul Valdita is a person.
Mr. Engel previously had supplied his phone records to the investigators. And Mr. Diaz told investigators that date and time that the mystery man Raul was making these threatening phone calls.
When we compared them, lo and behold, calls that matched when he said the Raul calls were coming to him from William Engel's phone number.
And this was around the time that Ziamara was really starting to put distance between her and William, and also around the time that Andre and Ziamara started dating.
Right. And so, okay, are you just a jealous husband? Why are you monitoring her life? So yeah, that's weird and suspicious, calling a little creepy, but it's not enough to get a search warrant. It just raises red flags and gets them a little closer to finding a possible motive.
So now, remember, William told police that the evening of Ziamara's disappearance, she called Decor's main line to tell William that she was on her way. The question is, who can verify that? Who would have answered the phone? So the police tracked down a man named Blake who worked as a supervisor at Decor, and he says, yeah, that call never happened. I know Ziamara. I know her voice. She never called. Blake also volunteers that the evening Ziamara didn't call, an alarm went off across the street at a place called Casa Warehouse.
Right, which, okay, cool. That probably has nothing to do with it. Oh, wait, other than the fact that Casa Warehouse is owned by William's brother, Herbert. What? So Blake walks over to the warehouse and William was there. And he's like, oh no, everything's fine. Totally fine here. I'll be right back over. Go count the glass bits in the bobbery corner of the thing. Yeah, no, it's great. We're all good here. We're good.
And this was around 7:30, 8:30 that night when Ziamara was supposed to be at Decor. And so investigators are like, that is really fucking weird. And William never told us about that alarm going off. Again, things are not looking great for William. And also police are thinking there's no way this man, if he is involved, did this alone. He absolutely had help.
Right, because how did the body end up in South Carolina when everything is corroborating that William was absolutely in New Jersey? That's the only thing they know for certain.
When we learned about the fake name Raul and the alarm over at Casa and that the supervisor hadn't transferred the call, we got enough information together to establish probable cause and get a search warrant on both Casa Warehouse and Decor Incorporated.
On December 21st, they go to CASA.
Now, CASA Warehouse is very large, so they split up into teams, and while this is happening, employees call the man in charge of CASA, and that man was William's brother, Herbert. So he shows up, and the police are like, yeah, we're investigating Ziamara Engel's murder, and we have a search warrant, and Herbert puts on this whole song and dance talking about, you think it happened here? And
I don't know anything that happened here.
And the police are like, yeah, we do. And you cannot get off with this because one thing you are not, Meryl Streep.
Right. So they do a background check on Herbert. Nothing of consequence comes up. And unfortunately, that search warrant, though a huge break in the case, it doesn't yield much. No forensic evidence was found. No blood. Nothing of Ziamara's. So while they knew they were on the right track, it's not anything that's going to help them out. And by this time, we're practically at Christmas. So everything is kind of a wash for a bit.
Yeah, everything comes to a standstill. And basically, the Engel brothers, with them, it's business as usual. But then we hit January 11th, 1985, 4 weeks after the murder, and we are back in Hackensack, New Jersey. The prosecutor's office receives a phone call from the Secret Service to tell them that an informant shared information about a man named Pee-wee Wright.
Is that a real name?
That's, I don't know. Pee-wee?
Pee-wee?
Pee-wee from Paterson, New Jersey?
So wacky in Paterson, New Jersey.
Do you know I only found out that was Cyndi Lauper like 6 months ago?
I know, that's wild.
I had no idea. It makes so much sense. And I think it was when Paul Rubens died that I was looking into it because I loved Paul Rubens because I went into this whole thing about how he's like one of the last clowns, like actual the art of clowning. And I was reading an article and it was penned and sung by Cyndi Lauper. I'm a dum-dum. Anyway, a Pee-wee, that can't be real, but go on.
You know, that,
go on with the boar film.
That show was wild because it had a whole generation of kids saying, remember Make a Lick a High, Make a Lick a High Ho, which is yeah. Make her lick a hiney, make her lick a hiney ho.
I didn't know that until right now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I have something to do.
Did I ruin your childhood?
No, but Lawrence Fishburne was the cowboy.
Okay.
I loved that show. That show was amazing.
Well, okay, we just hit 9 a.m. and our ADHD is really starting to kick in.
There was an individual named P.B. Wright from Paterson, New Jersey, who had been talking about having participated in disposing of a body in South Carolina and burning a car.
So investigators are like, immediately, we are finding this man. And they do. They track him down and he comes in for an interview.
Do you know where they come in for an interview?
Where?
Hackensack. Do you know what they have in Hackensack?
What?
One of the best malls.
Really?
Hackensack Mall. Closed on Sundays, though. Blue laws. I'll never understand it. Anyway.
What's a blue law?
Blue law. You can't sell merchandise on Sundays. It's an old, old law. And there are counties in New Jersey who still have blue laws. You can't sell liquor. You can't sell goods. You can't sell clothes. Like, Target is open for food, but you can't buy clothes.
Liquor? I hardly know her.
Okay.
Sorry. It's kicking in. So they ask Pee-wee what he knows.
And he's really cooperative. He tells them everything. He says the night of the murder, December 13th, 1984, he was at work and a guy named James McFadden came up and he's like, hi, how are you? How's everything going? Quick question. Do you want to go to South Carolina with me? He's like, what? We barely know each other. And you want to go on a joyride? What do you want to do? You want to go hit every Waffle House between here and there? What do you want to do? And James was like, no, I just need to drive this station wagon down to South Carolina. No big whoop. I'll give you $2,000. I'll give you $2,000 to take a ride. And he doesn't know James McFadden very well, but he's like, okay. So they drove all night. Sorry, I got it. This is dark. I got to lighten it up.
That's fine.
So James McFadden says, I'm from South Carolina. I know where we're going. All you have to do is sit there, go with me. $2,000. Sounds great.
Yeah, and James explained that it was for some insurance reason. And listen, $2,000 is a lot of money, especially in 1984. So Pee-wee didn't ask a lot of questions. And he said, yeah, sure, I'll go. So they drive down to Olanta, South Carolina.
And they get there. James McFadden tells Pee-wee to take a box of wine out of the car and bring it to his aunt and uncle who live in a trailer behind the house.
Remember box wine?
Remember, they still have box wine.
Do they really?
Of course they have box wine.
You've been in Jersey too long.
It's lovely. You get a lovely box of rosé, you sit on the porch, you drink the wine all day. I mean, I don't drink, but I've seen it.
They need to make wine in a packet like those Capri Suns. That's what we need.
I'm sure someone has thought of that. That's a great idea. You should Google that and then come up with it. Actually, we just told thousands of people your $1 million idea. We're not good business people.
Did I mention we're going to Indianapolis? So Pee-wee goes to the trunk of the car, and as he's getting the box of wine, he sees blonde hair sticking out of a compartment in the back of the car. If you remember those old station wagons, there was the seat, and then where the floor was, there's two handles you could pull on to reveal storage underneath, and he saw blonde hair sticking out where those handles were. So Pee-wee freaks the fuck out.
Can you imagine? This guy just thinks he's going on a leisurely drive and there's hair. And he's like, please tell me that you have a collection of wigs under there. What the fuck is that?
Yeah, please tell me you're moonlighting as a drag queen on the weekends and your name is Anita Drive to South Carolina. Okay.
He came in sixth on RuPaul's Drag Race
Dragways.
In the 80s.
Dragways.
Welcome to Dragways.
Release the secret.
We waste the secret drag queen. James is like, I would make a lovely drag queen, but no. Have a seat. Let me tell you what's going on.
Yeah, and James explains that it is, in fact, a body in the back seat. And Pee-wee was like, I did not sign up for this.
He's like, it is bad enough I have to walk this earth with the name like Pee-wee. But now you're telling me I'm involved in criminal activity and I didn't even know? Now, Pee-wee is absolutely forthcoming. He's like, I was a part of this, but I was dragged into it. He said that McFadden convinced him to dispose of the body. I'm sure that involved a series of threats or something. I don't think he was just like, come on, it'll be fun. I don't know what that conversation looked like, but I'm thinking it was something a little dark.
Yeah. So they douse the car in gasoline and set it on fire, and then they hop on a train back to New Jersey. Now, the Pee-wee story, it was consistent with what they found at the crime scene, including the location. He knew details that no one could have known unless they were a part of the investigation. So they believe his story.
Pee-wee told us that after they came back, McFadden did pay him $2,000, which is what he had promised. McFadden told him that they were doing this for the boss, that if it was done well, they'd have more work.
And he just takes the money and goes. And he says, yes, I was involved, but he wants them to be very clear. He had no idea what he was getting himself into. And that all tracks. But the boss, you say, who is the boss? Because the company's name was Cooper Nationwide. Who owns that? Herbert Engel, William Engel's brother.
So now on January 18th, 1985, police track down James McFadden and they bring him in for questioning. They tell him everything they know and explain to James, this is your opportunity to tell the truth. So we find out that 2 months prior to Ziamara's death, James had only been working for Cooper Nationwide for maybe a couple months. Herbert Engel took an interest in James, started getting to know him, taking him out to dinners, drinks, stuff like that. And James says, look, I'm not a great drinker. It's not what I do. I'm like, have you met Ellen? She's not a great drinker. I understand.
One drink and she'll be crying on your bar apron and telling you her life story.
But James says, after a few drinks, Herbert started asking me, are you bad? How bad are you? And if I were James, I'd be like, where the fuck is this going?
Yeah, I feel like this is ending up in some gay Harlequin romance novel if I didn't know any better.
Truly. And so then Herbert confides in James and says, hey, I have a cousin who's having some trouble with an ex-girlfriend and I need your help taking care of it. And James immediately understood what that meant. Herbert was asking him to kill his cousin's ex-girlfriend. And then Herbert says, I'll give you $25,000 to do it.
And James is sitting there now drunk as a skunk off a couple of whiskey sodas or whatever. He's like, listen, while $25,000 is a life-changing amount of money, I don't know anything about killing people. I don't know how to do it or how to go about it. Herbert was persistent. Remember, this is an entitled man. Money is no object. He is pushing. He is pushing out. Keeps taking him out for drinks. Always pumping him full of booze until James McFadden finally agrees.
And James says, I was in too deep. I felt like at this point, I had no other choice but to agree.
The night of December 12th, 1984, the Wednesday before Ziamara's disappearance and murder, they finalized the plan.
Herbert gave him the details of what he wanted him to do, where he had to do it, when he had to do it.
Herbert gives him a picture of Ziamara Engel, and he tells him to come to Castle Warehouse the next night.
He's also given a set of keys to the Ford that Ziamara would come there with.
He's like, it's got wood paneling. It's going to be all the rage in a couple years. It's really a hot commodity.
I think it's very cute.
I know the guy who came up with the wood paneling. He had a great idea. It was a great idea. It's lovely. So sure enough, William shows up on December 13th. Herbert gives him a bunch of alcohol. And he's like, did you bring a gun? And James McFadden's like, no, I didn't bring a gun. I told you I don't know what I'm doing. I didn't bring a gun. Herbert's like, all right, so how are you going to do this? He goes, I have this wire from an old refrigerator. I guess I was going to use that. And Herbert's like, fine, whatever. She's on her way here.
And Herbert tells James to go wait on the loading dock. And James does what he's told. Herbert leaves. So now James is just waiting there alone in the dark in this warehouse when he hears people coming in. James looks and sees a man who he thinks is Herbert's cousin with a flashlight. And when he gave police a description of this man, it very much fit a description of William Engel.
Yeah, he's like, what is this family tree? Because these cousins look very, very similar.
It's true. And he said also there was a woman following behind him. So the cousin futzes around with the light switch and is like, oh, that's weird. The lights aren't working. And that's when the cousin coerces Ziomara into position where James comes up behind her, wraps the cord around her neck, and begins strangling her. And while this is happening, James says this cousin comes over smoking a cigarette and calls Ziomara a bitch to her face. And finally, Ziomara passes out and finally dies.
And then the alarm goes off. They don't explain why the alarm goes off. So they take care of that. So that would sort of fit that timeline that Blake explained earlier that the alarm went off at that warehouse.
McFadden then asks the cousin to help him put the body in the car, which the cousin does.
The cousin's original instructions of how to dispose of the body was to use acid.
And he's like, I don't know how to use acid. What are you talking about? And then the rest of the story about the fire and everything, again, the stories of James McFadden and Pee Wee Wright all line up. We also learn that that night, James received part of his payment. He received $1,300 that night. And then when he came back from South Carolina, they gave him another $5,000. So he got $6,300, but where's the rest of the money? He's waiting for the rest of his $25,000.
They stiffed him. So the thing is, James knew details about this case that no one could have known, again, unless they were involved in the investigation. So they knew he was telling the truth. And he also identified both Ziomara and William, who was supposed to be the cousin, through pictures that were shown to him by investigators. So now James is placed under arrest for murder. And then the police arrest both William and Herbert simultaneously as they walk out of decor. William refused to speak and asked for a lawyer. Herbert spoke only a little bit just to deny his involvement. And he said he knew James McFadden as a good employee. He then said Ziomara was a nice lady, but now I want my lawyer. And that was the end of the interview.
And they're charged with conspiracy to commit murder. And they continue to try and find out more information. So the investigators from New Jersey, they haven't been down to South Carolina yet. They had no idea what this car looked like. They had never seen it. So they go and conduct their own investigation. And it's at this time that in the blazed car, they find a wire. Now, of course, they didn't know what they were looking for before, but that wire they found matched what James explained was probably the murder weapon. And it was. It was the old plug of a refrigerator. And now they have the murder weapon.
After the arrest, William and Herbert Engel are in the Bergen County Jail. So is James McFadden, but because he's a state's witness, we have him sort of off to the side in a different cell away from them. We get a call one day from the U.S. Attorney's Office in Brooklyn. They tell us that they have a high-level informant from an organized crime case that admitted that William and Herbert Engel were trying to hire other inmates to kill McFadden.
The plan was to kill this man after he was leaving prison church on a Sunday when they knew guards wouldn't be there to protect him as he was going up a staircase. Thankfully, they were able to move James in time before any of this happened, because if James died, there would be no case because James was their star witness.
Yep. Now remember, these Engel brothers had a lot of money. Money equals power. And they had a high, high paid attorney. They had the best in the business. And I will tell you more about this man at the end of the episode. They do not include it, but it's a man by the name of Miles Feinstein. And wait till you hear about this guy. So they did all kinds of legal gymnastics. They were trying to make this process very difficult. They were filing motions, and they were successful. They had this trial delayed for 2 years, and 2 years pass, and in 1986, William and Herbert Engel are tried together.
Now, the goal of the defense was to make James McFadden look like a liar. They tried to make it seem like he was having an affair with Ziamara and that he killed her and was trying to frame the Engel brothers. But James's story was consistent, and he did very well on the stand, especially when the defense grilled him. He stuck to his story.
And we see some footage from the actual trial, and there's a very 80s looking man pointing to them, discussing the Engel brothers, insisting they weren't the murderer. And they're like, yeah, okay, nice try. Good work. This was fun. Absolutely not.
So all three men were found guilty and sentenced to 30 years in prison before being eligible for parole. But here's the thing. Both Engel brothers died in prison. Herbert Engel died of respiratory failure 9 years after he went to jail. He was only 45. And shortly after, William Engel died of cancer.
Yeah, best of luck. I'm sure you got really, really great care in prison, sir.
The family, the victim, never believed that we could take down these two rich and powerful guys. Now, you came from a cultural background in which money and power, people get away with things, and not this time.
They didn't beat us. We won in the end. Her family loved Ziamara. The family gave us a plaque at the end. They were so happy that we had found some justice for them.
None of that brings Ziamara back. And now these two poor children are left without a mother and a father.
It's so sad. And that's the end of the episode. And they sort of touch on something that I actually thought immediately, and I'm really shocked that they brought it up, but I'm happy that they did. Not only did William do the unthinkable, the unspeakable, leaving his children without a mother, but he actually used his children as leverage.
Yep.
Because, of course, a mother would say, yes, let's go Christmas shopping for our girls. Let's do the right thing. Even though she hated him, she was scared of him, whatever. She's not going to deny her children that right. And that is absolutely gut-wrenching and despicable.
Insidious.
Yeah, you're raised rich. You think you're above the law. You think you can get out of any situation. But you're going to use your kids to murder their mother?
Yeah. To weaponize your children is truly disgusting and abhorrent.
It is all so sad. And this actually had the potential to go in a very corrupt way. And I'm really glad that it didn't and that justice was served.
Yeah, me too.
Say something funny.
Well, since we have invoked Mano and we are now part of the craft and we're both in our robes and we look like hammered shit, do you think we could do that glamour spell where we just push our hands over our hair and immediately we'll look like Lonnie Anderson?
Let's try it. Ready? Yeah. 1, 2, 3.
No, we still look like Milton Berle.
Oh boy. Oh boy, down bitches. Jersey, awful, corruption, killer siblings. I do not like anyone enough. Let alone my flesh and blood. Absolutely not.
No, I will go to Sam's Club. I will go to Walmart. I will go to even Arby's for you. I will not go to prison for you. Sorry.
I think not, John and Joe. You better not come over here with that shit. Not today, not any day. We love you, down bitches. Please give us a follow on social media if you have not. You can find us on I Think Not Pod. You can find some videos of us recording, other stupid stuff. It's all pretty stupid. I'm telling you now. So if that's what you're interested in, you should call your therapist, but also come hang out with us because you found your people.
Yeah, when people ask us, hey, Ellen, Joey, what's your brand? We say stupid. Our brand is stupid.
So if you like that, join us. Join our Facebook group. We're at I Think Not Podcast Discussion Group. All kinds of announcements there. That's where you're going to find out everything before you find out on the episode. You can also find all kinds of buffoonery, all kinds of great discussions about these episodes and other things happening in true crime. What else, Joey?
Well, you can also follow us on Instagram and TikTok at I Think Not Pod, where we're doing a different version of our stupidity buffoonery.
And if you would like to take a look at over 150 bonus episodes, it is all there on our Patreon. Patreon.com/I Think Not. You're going to find extra episodes for $5 a month. You will get 4 bonus episodes. 4 extra episodes. Then you can add ad-free tiers. We also have Swamp Talk, which is our monthly talk show. You can sit in on Swamp Talk with us. We have a quarterly painting party. We have watch parties all the time. Movie night coming up. And we just love the opportunity to have a bigger sense of community with our people. And all of that is available. Find something that works in your budget, or you can always find us here on the general feed. Every Wednesday, we will be here.
Yeah, we will.
Whether we have to record at 8 a.m. or 10 p.m., we're going to do it because we love you that much. But you know who else I love?
Who?
You, Joey.
I love you too, Yellen Martian. I love you, DBs. I hope you have a blessed day.
I love you, DBs.
Love you. Bye. Bye. Oh, I mind you, Ellen.
Ivanka Trump's makeup.
Let's save that for Swamp Talk.
Okay.
Okay.
All I'll say is 2 black holes for eyes. It was terrible.
I Think Not, the podcast where Joey and I will do whatever it takes to... What? The podcast where Joey and I do whatever it takes to... Fucking hell.